Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Kania. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from USA Today Lions Wire. And this is the official USA Today Lions Wire podcast. We're talking about all things Lions. Sadly, Eric suffered another loss, 30-27 to the San Francisco 49ers out in Levi Stadium in Santa Clara. Worse than the score indicated for most of the game until the trademark mad dash at the end, the tease, if you would.
Well, you know, they had a much better second half. They looked a lot stronger. They had opportunities to win that game. And whether they should have been in that game or not, based on their first half play, is debatable. But bottom line is they were in the game. They had the opportunities. And unfortunately, they couldn't capitalize.
And unfortunately, they're 0-2.
Yep.
Going into Sunday Night Football's tilt with the New England Patriots, quarterbacked by a young fella named Tom Brady and coached by Bill Belichick. We'll talk about them in a little bit. First, Lions injury news. There's no report until Wednesday, so we can't really talk about Ziggy Ansah being on the injury report. But he's still got an ailing shoulder. TJ Lang still has the bad back. Darius Slay, concussion protocol.
Yeah, so they're all question marks. You know, Ansah, I think, was close to returning, or at least we were alluded to the fact that he was close to returning last game. So there's a good possibility he could be back, which would be a big help for that defense. And then Lang, though, he missed all of last week. So he is a big question mark up in the air. Would be nice to have him back. I thought Kenny Wiggins didn't okay in his replacement. He had some a nice showing overall, I'd say, considering his place as a reserve. And Slay, it's just a matter of passing the NFL protocols there with the concussion. So it's just too early in the week to really be able to ascertain if any of these guys will be able to play. And maybe all three can. It's just too early to really know.
It's a wait and see.
Yep.
And then hopefully they all can play. But if not, well, we've dealt without at least Ansah and Lang a lot over the last year. So that wouldn't be too big of a shocker. All right. There's been a couple late moves. First of all, they waived offensive lineman Jamil Demby, who they just picked up, but they don't like him. They're getting rid of him.
He is, he succeeded in a lot of the areas that the Lions prefer their offensive linemen to be proficient at. And so it made sense that of them to take a waiver on him, but apparently his lack of athleticism just wasn't enough, or it kept him out of what they were looking for. And so away he goes. That frees up a spot on the 53-man roster. There was no corresponding move, so we really don't know what's going on. They worked out a slew of players today, a fullback, another tight end fullback hybrid, a couple of edge rushers. And so it'll be interesting to see which direction they go. Could be any of these guys that they add. I looked at the waiver wire to see if there was somebody they might have claimed. But nobody really jumped out.
Except Corey Coleman.
Who they announced had cleared waivers. So we know that the Lions didn't get in on that. So I don't think there's really anything. It would make more sense that they sign a guy who they worked out today. And, John Simon, I think, was the most notable name that I liked as an edge setter. A former Ohio State Buckeye, played a lot in Indy. He's a good off-the-ball guy, kind of like he would give them more depth. And signing him would talk about, it would lead us to think that maybe Ansah isn't ready because he kind of fits that Kennard, Eli Harold type role. But, I think he'd be a guy that's a possibility. We could also see Ripowski, the fullback, who was in Green Bay and probably would have been starting in Green Bay if they hadn't have changed their offensive focus this year. So if they aren't happy with Ballore or if they want to add more special teams, he's a guy they could potentially add as well. So we'll find out more probably tomorrow morning. By the time, some of you listen to this, the move will already have been made.
All right. Also, the team has lost their Cromartie. Marcus Cromartie was released from IR.
Yeah, and again, these moves, like with Zach Zenner last week, The team, once the player is healthy enough to pass a physical, then the team and the player's agent, they come to an agreement. They come up with an injury settlement where they basically buy them out of their contract, and then it frees up a bunch of money in cap space for the team, and the player then becomes an immediate free agent where he can go and sign anywhere he wants. So benefit for him is he can now go somewhere where he can contribute. Benefit for the Lions is they free up about $600,000 in cap space.
All right. Back to the 49ers game. You had your article, six takeaways from the game. So everybody got 20% extra. We often see five takeaways from the game.
Yeah.
Number one, right now, the team is undisciplined. So I don't know what that's actually supposed to mean. That we're going to assume they're going to be disciplined one day?
Well, that's the concept, right? Is we've been talking and we've tried to warn people about this as you know, we headed into the season, that the defense was going to take time, and they are undisciplined in a lot of areas, and one of them being is their gap discipline. They are struggling to hold the gap, which is leading to big runs, and they're not filling the proper lanes, there's a good video that I tweeted out where Jared Davis on the play is assigned to two gaps. He hesitates in the first gap and then tries to make a move into the second. And that hesitation costs him the ability to make the play at the proper time. And you know, as he gains experience, he'll learn how to properly allocate which gap he's supposed to be in. But right now, they're just undisciplined in it. They're not holding their gaps. They're not choosing the right gaps properly. But they're also undisciplined in other areas. They're undisciplined on special teams. They're not holding their lanes on special teams. And then they're also undisciplined in their mentality going into the game. You know, in the first game, you could see that when they started getting rocked by the Jets, how they basically unraveled. They didn't seem mentally able to adjust to it. And then this past game, we saw LeGarrette Blount come off the sidelines to take a shot at a player after he hit Stafford. And I get that we like to see our players sticking up for our quarterback. I don't like players coming off the bench to do that.
At dumb times.
You know what? And people are going to, and there's even a question, I believe, about this that you know, I don't want to spoil the question, but there's a proper way to do it. And costing your team 15 yards and getting yourself ejected, it's just not smart football. There's other ways you can inject positivity and spark the team, and that's it's just a lot of undisciplined behavior, and all of these things are correctable, and that's the caveat with the right now this team is undisciplined.
All right, number two, Kenny Galladay looked sharp when they looked his way. He was targeted 9 times.
Yeah, and it was Sunday. A lot early, and then a huge gap in the middle where they didn't look his way, and then they looked a lot at him deep into the game as well. When they did look his way, they were very proficient. They got a lot of yardage. They had, like you just noted, there was a lot of targets.
9 targets, didn't you have 6 receptions for 89 yards?
That sounds about right. And a touchdown.
And a touchdown.
The touchdown was very nice. Kudos to Jim Bob Cooter for the play design on that touchdown, where they had previously brought him in line and then used him as a blocking receiver. And then they faked the block and split him out and got him into the open, which led to a touchdown. And credit to him for getting the ball and getting that yak and then having the toughness to break the safety hit and spin and get into the end zone. So Galladay, man, he's on his way. I'm impressed with him. He continues to excel.
All right. Number three, Stafford's deep ball is off. That is the understatement of the 6 takeaways.
Yeah. You know, and in
could
the first,
not connect on one deep pass to 4 open receivers, or was it 5?
5 by my count. 4 times to Marvin Jones and 1 to Kenny Galladay. The biggest play he had was the Golden Tate cut over the middle after the LeGarrette Blount ejection, where they were at 3rd and 19 or whatever it was, and Golden did a typical slant route that he had done previously. And again, this is a nice kudos to Jim Bob Cooter, who called the slant play, but then Tate, he had a secondary move in there, which caused him to then go up the field And when he went up the field, Stafford got it, and then we saw the yak after that from the Yak King. So, again, a couple of nice plays by Jim Bob Cooter here, but getting back to the original point, Stafford had Marvin Jones multiple times and Kenny Golladay with a step on their receivers and overthrew them. And not overthrew them a little bit, like 5 yards overthrew them. And that's concerning. In the Jets game, he did it a couple of times, but it was more, they dropped more in the Jets game, which caused some of these deep ball problems. But yeah, that was, you know, he had 360 plus yards. You know what I mean? Like, he had a good statistical game, but you hit those deep balls and...
It would have made the difference in the game.
Exactly.
B, you take that lid off the defense. You know,
the open stuff
elite
underneath
of the elite quarterbacks hit one of those. It's not much to ask to get one.
Yeah, last year he hit around 50% of those. And he was...
He's got to build his way back up now.
Yeah. Yep. And he's capable, but... He seems off.
He's capable of everything. Sure. He probably has more physical tools than any of the other quarterbacks in the league, except for maybe speed. But we just never, I mean, he's better than what I've ever seen, you know, as a Lion. But I don't know. He's still just not one of the main guys. Like Roethlisberger, even though his skills have deteriorated, would have hit on one of those throws. Brady would have, obviously, Rodgers. You know, there's a handful of other guys we can put in. Kirk Cousins probably drops one of those dimes.
You know what? History tells us, though, based on what Stafford's done, is that those should be coming. You know what I mean?
We'll see.
So,
number four, and this also an understatement, maybe not as big as the Stafford one, struggling to stop the run. Niners rushed the ball 28 times for 190 yards, led by Matt Breida, 138 yards and 11 carries. 12.5 yards per carry. That's like back in the 80s when Michigan would play their non-conference schedule. That's what we'd see out of Tyrone Wheatley.
I believe he leads the NFL in rushing now, too. But the Lions are dead last in stopping the run. And I think they've allowed 50 yards more than the next closest team after two games. So that's not good. And we saw it in Oakland when Marshawn Lynch hit the B-gap and took it up, and Quinn had a bad angle. And then the Bucs hit one in the preseason because they said, hey, we looked at what the Raiders did, and we hit that same thing. And then the Jets basically said, hey, yeah, we looked what they did in the preseason, and then they hit their big run. And so I'm sure San Fran did the same thing. And this is now four teams in six games that have noticed a vulnerability and hit 60-plus yard runs, and the Lions aren't adjusting to that, and that is concerning because you can scheme to put pressure on the quarterback, and we've seen that after zero pressures in the preseason. We now have seven sacks from a linebacker crew, and that's the most of any of the linebacker crews in the NFL. But so we've seen how you can scheme pressure, but you can't scheme to stop the run. Like, you just have to be able to
own your gap.
And that is a problem right now. And the biggest culprit has unfortunately been Ricky Jean-Francois. And because of that, I think we could see a little bit more of Deshaun Hand moving forward.
On first and second down.
Possibly.
Number five, finally a positive. Second positive. Galladay was a positive. Mm-hmm. Four different linebackers got six sacks. So six of the seven linebacker sacks came on Sunday. And Kennard was your player of the game.
Yeah, you know, Kennard has been really a nice shining star. And he looked really, in control of what he needed to do when Ansah was playing on the field opposite him. When Ansah left, it made things harder for Kennard. But Kennard has continued to find ways to produce. And so after a questionable preseason with him, he's come out of the gates doing very well.
Busters.
Yes, he's been one of the better defensive players that they have. He'd definitely be probably in the top three, I'd say, of players on the Lions right now as far as performance goes. So he's had a nice showing. The other two, so he had two sacks. Jared Davis had two sacks. I thought Davis had a nice game
stopping the run.
Well, again, he picked the wrong gaps a couple of times, right? We just talked about that. But his coverage was better. It was a step up from the Jets game, and we'll see how he fares this week, though.
All right, number six, the biggest sin of them all. The clock mismanagement at the end of the first half.
So this has been the biggest amount of grief that I've gotten on social media is for me writing about this clock mismanagement. And I'm surprised that I've gotten as much grief as I have about this. And for me, it just comes down to a very simple concept. When they got the sack on the 49ers, they put the 49ers into a 3rd and 19 inside of their own 10 with a minute and 40 something mm-hmm. left on the clock, right? At that point, the odds of them converting that first down are very low. And you have three
unless
timeouts.
Unless they ran the ball, Ricky Jean Francois.
and you have three timeouts in your pocket. And Patricia's strategy was to conserve those timeouts, get the ball back in Stafford's hands, allow Stafford to utilize the field and execute those timeouts in a fashion in which he could properly, utilize the clock, I guess. But by not calling a timeout on that third down play, they essentially wasted about 40 seconds of clock.
Okay? And that should also be an indicator that San Francisco has really no intention of getting a first down.
Yeah, as that clock continues to just wind down. I mean, obviously, they're playing the just-in-case-we-don't-get-it type of thing. But, yeah. But, yeah, they're look, inside your own 10 when it's 3rd and 19 like that, you're the it's like 95-plus that you're not going to convert, right? Mm-hmm. So you play the odds, you take the timeout, you get the ball back with a minute 40 instead of less than a minute, which is what they ended up having, right? I get the concept of wanting that clock to run down because what if Stafford goes 3 and out and then you have to give the ball back to San Francisco? But that's plain scared.
Plus, you'd have field position in your favor.
Exactly. So I don't like playing scared. I don't like playing scared. I don't like going against the odds. And so I didn't like the fact that they allowed 40 seconds to waste. So regardless, they don't take the timeout. They now get the ball. They go down the field. But now it's 3rd and 2, and you've got 10 seconds on the clock. You can't really go for the 2 yards because it doesn't make sense to go for the 2 yards because the time's going to tick off the clock. You're going to have to kick a field goal anyways. So you don't have you're not trying to convert the for a first down. Instead, because there's only 10 seconds left on the clock, you have to go to the end zone. They don't hit the end zone, then they're forced to kick the field goal. If you take the timeout on defense, and you have now 40 seconds or 50 seconds on the clock and a 3rd and 2, you now have the ability to go for the first down if you want. Allow yourself another set of downs to then take shots at the end zone, and your options are there. Now, maybe they don't convert the third down and they still end up kicking the field goal, or maybe, there's a whole variety of maybes and ifs and buts. But the bottom line for me is, by not calling the timeout, you're taking the clock out, the control of the clock out of your hands. And you, for a team who's built around the offense and for a team who has confidence or who says they have confidence in their offense, by allowing 40 seconds to tick off the clock, you're not in control. If you get the ball and you drive down the field and there's 40 seconds left and you need to run more clock because you don't want to leave time on the clock going into the half and let them try and get the ball back, you can run the ball and run the clock. My point is that it was a mismanagement to not want to have that clock under your control. And I'll that's just basic kind of football to me.
Basic Madden football.
Yeah.
All right. So the end of the game, we have the well, I don't think it was controversial. It's the right call. I mean, stupid.
Yeah.
Sure. It wouldn't have gotten called on the Big Five, but, it's called in this game. It's part of the curse. It's all just part of the whole thing. Quandre Diggs calling it an awful call, he being the offender on the play. The Lions submitted the call or the play to the NFL for clarification. NFL says it's good. No surprise.
Yeah, so props to Tracy Walker for making that incredible interception. That was a well-covered and nicely timed interception. And the Diggs call, while it was technically the correct call, because I know it was within 5 yards, and I know he was jamming him, But he did obviously grasp the shoulder pad. And so it was technically the right call.
Yeah.
But holds like that happen on half of the plays sure. in the NFL. And those holds can be called half of the time in the NFL if the referees wanted to. But the referees typically wait to call those only on plays where it's impacting the actual play. The fact that Garoppolo didn't even look Diggs' way, the fact that he had thrown the ball before Diggs even held Kittle, tells me it's an iffy call. And most of the time, that call isn't made. Is it technically the right call? Yes. Is it a call that it's made every time? Absolutely not. And so, yes, I can understand Diggs' perspective. I can also understand the NFL's perspective. It's a tough call to have to take at that critical junction in the game, that's for sure.
Yeah, not surprising, part of the curse. All right, moving on.
let's keep going down to Risden's part.
All right, so Jeff Risden, your overlord, has four things the Lions must change. Number one, no shocker, run defense discipline.
Yeah, his suggestion that I really liked was if you move Jared Davis, even slightly further off of the line of scrimmage, it gives him a little bit more time to react. That will allow him to find the gaps properly. And I think that is a simple adjustment that can help them in run defense.
All right, number two, they need to correct the special teams woes.
Yeah, I mean,
stay in your lane.
You got that. You just have to drill that into them. That's really the only way.
Shouldn't be that much.
Yeah, I know, but that's really what you have to do. It just has to be, this is what you do, this is what you do, this is what you do.
All right. Number three, dump useless offensive plays.
Yeah. Like sometimes, and what Jeff pointed out is that sometimes they run plays just to run them. Even though they know they're not successful, they're just running a run play to get 2 yards so that they are keeping the defense honest. If you get rid of those plays and you run plays that work, you can still keep the defense honest in other ways. And this has been a staple of Jim Bob Cooter his whole tenure is sometimes he just runs it because he knows that I need to call a run
play. In the NFL, you need to run the ball every now and again.
In order to stay balanced, I got to run, so I'll run this play. Even if it doesn't work, I still got to run it because it's a run play. Well, there's ways around it.
Number four, get Stafford off to a faster start. Much easier said than done.
Sure, and I think if you look to how Stafford has been successful, it's been when they've gone to tempo or no huddle. And Jeff suggested that if they start the game and try and put the defense on their heels early, that they can throw the defense off, and that's something Stafford can do. The difficulty with that is that if they go tempo and they go three and out, then it doesn't really help you a whole lot. But yeah. Easier completions would be mighty helpful.
Now, have they ever tried that in practice? Did you ever see Stafford go out there right away and they run the 2-minute drill? And is he just a mess when that's happening? Why they choose not to do it? I understand they have the loser mentality of we don't want to go 3 and out and give him the ball back right away. But, you know, something's got to give here. Something's got to change. Why don't we gamble with that?
I think they should have tempo written into non-traditional sets. I think having tempo put in in a 2-minute drill is fine, and that seems to be successful. I think that should be written into mid-quarter aspects as well. I think you catch them off guard that way, and you've seen it happen to Detroit, where Detroit has been caught off guard, and all of a sudden you get on your heels and. The offense can find success. So usually what we saw in practice was it's more scripted, so we don't see that kind of like surprise element. I think that would be the big thing to kind of take away is we want that surprise element would really give the Lions an added boost, I think.
All right, let's move on. We're going to play the New England Patriots on Sunday night. They are the NFL's penultimate champion. I believe that's the right terminology for it. And the runner-up from last season, which everybody knows. The Vegas betting line, just showing how much confidence they have in the Lions. Patriots -7, which means they favor the Patriots by a touchdown on the road on national television in Detroit. So yeah.
Not overly surprising.
Not surprising, but it's sad.
The Patriots are something like 15-1 after a double-digit loss.
17-1 after the last 15 years.
There you go.
And Belichick is 15-5 versus ex-assistants. So we've got two lines crossing here.
Yeah. And most of this stuff isn't going to favor Detroit. Any of these lines, any of these historical, any bet lines, all this stuff is going to heavily favor the Patriots.
Also, I believe in those 18 games, the Patriots' margin of winning is 15 points and after the double-digit loss. Referee, Cleet Blakeman, picked especially for NBC because he averages 13 flags a game, well below the NFL average of 14.5. Well, not well below, 1.5.
And ironically, he actually favors, he flags the home team more than the away team.
Oh, well, that's not going to change on Sunday. I have a weird feeling on that one. You might want to write that one down. The broadcast team, as we all know for Sunday Night Football, Al Michaels of Do You Believe Miracles fame, and Chris Collinsworth of... Chris Collinsworth fame.
Yeah, yeah. Used to be a Bengals receiver.
Yeah.
I'm glad I would be in the press box for this one.
Yeah, well, maybe you'll catch a glimpse of old Al. Ask him about how it was golfing with OJ all the time and whether they still do it or not. I bet you can't really answer that question. You won't get a very positive response about it. All right, so Patriots, we discussed, just came off of an 11-point defeat to the Jacksonville Jaguars, whom they beat in the AFC Championship game last year, 31-20. Or that's what the Jags beat the Pats by, 31-20. Their quarterback is Tom Terrific, who is retroactively every Michigan fan's favorite quarterback. Maybe not when he was here, but now, after all of his success. Let's talk about the running game. We don't have to talk about Tom Brady. Everybody's probably the greatest of all time.
Yes.
Sorry, Joe Montana. All right. Running backs. Sony Michael, James White, Rex Burkhead, Kenyon Barner, and James Devlin, the fullback.
Yeah, and you know, you're going to recognize a lot of like roles here. Like James White is basically their version of Theo Riddick. Last week, he caught 7 of 8 balls, but he went for 73 yards. So he's actually more productive version of Riddick right now. They don't mess around with trying to force the run with him like we do with Riddick. He is exclusively a pass catcher, but he's very proficient at it. Sony Michel and Burkhead were kind of co-starters. Burkhead did technically get the start, but he was out-touched by Michel. And, neither one is – they're both coming off injuries, so neither one really dominated. The big weapon for them last week was James White. So – we'll see. We'll see what they do. They have a nice three-headed monster. Barner would make 4, and then Devlin is kind of their Nick Ballore role.
It's a standard New England backfield.
You know,
it's not the same guys, but it's pretty traditional.
Sure.
All right. Wide receivers. The big news from this week is they acquired Josh Gordon from the waiver wire, and Julian Edelman is suspended. So we're looking at Chris Hogan and Cordarrelle Patterson out wide, and a little bit of Philip Dorsett.
Yeah, and Josh Gordon, it'll really be about how much he acclimates to the playbook. I think they'll put him out there, even if it's just run a 9 route, just to try and draw some coverage to open some things up underneath. Maybe specifically for Hogan. I do think they will have a couple plays designed for Gordon as well, but not expecting a blowout type of performance where he's going to launch himself onto the national stage or anything like that. He is a good player. Fortunately for the Lions, they'll get him in his first week with the Patriots instead of maybe like their 10th week with the Patriots when he's really acclimated himself. So,
I don't know. Like, they haven't had a ton of success with those guys except for Moss, and everybody's going to look at Moss.
Sure.
But look at Brandon Cooks. Look at Chad Ochocinco. They've had, other guys. Well, not Corey Coleman. Mm-hmm. They've had other guys. Well, I saw the red, white, and blue in my head. Like,
you're right.
But they've brought other name guys in over the past few years, and it hasn't been as successful as it was Moss.
The only thing, if you're clinging to something, the only thing you're clinging to is the fact that reports out of Browns camp were that it wasn't the Josh Gordon of old at Browns camp. It was like the junior varsity version of Josh Gordon at Browns camp. And that he wasn't the player that he was.
He hasn't played in 2.5 years.
Well, that's kind of the point, I guess, right?
All right. Now, the frightening position, because we know the Lions' recent lack of success against tight ends.
They did pretty good against
Kittle. They did well against George Kittle, but
yeah.
I don't know if George Kittle was the best receiving tight end in the NFL. He's going to have good and bad days.
They also got a lot of holding calls against them.
Yeah.
Like we just noted.
But we got Gronkowski.
Yep.
And that's going to be a problem. They also have Dwayne Allen and Jacob Hollister. Dwayne Allen's significant.
Yeah, but he's taken a downgrade to Gronk, of course. Last week, Gronk only went 2 for 15. They really, Jacksonville.
But Jalen Ramsey on him.
They have a really good defense, and so obviously they took care of him. And based on what we saw last week, it could be Quandre Diggs on him, and that's a tough matchup for Quandre Diggs. In week one, Gronk went 7 for 123 in a touchdown. And
that's
probably
what we're going to be looking more at on Sunday.
That's what's scary. And so a couple of alternatives, if Quandre isn't able to handle himself, is Tease Tabor and Tracy Walker. I think both of them have the length and the physicality to match up with Gronk a little bit better. They're still going to have a whole mess up of a problem trying to handle him. But, tight ends are always going to be a week-to-week problem, and this is probably the best tight end in the game.
All right, moving on to the offensive line. From left to right, Trent Brown, Joe Thuney, David Andrews, Shaq Mason, Marcus Cannon. Serviceable unit. Not great. This is standard Patriots offensive line.
Yeah, Cannon missed last week, and he was replaced by former Lion Adrian Waddle. So it'd be interesting to watch how that is going forward. Now, the big news here with the Patriots is that they lost their first-round draft pick, who was playing left tackle for them. So they had to trade to get Trent Brown to kind of fill in. So better on the interior than the exterior. I think if Waddle's in over Cannon, that could be another advantage for Devin Kennard. And, we'll kind of see. And Kennard's coming from the Giants. So he's played the Patriots before, and he's talked about studying the Patriots offense and how to get through them. And he's studied the Patriots defense on how they succeed. So I wouldn't be surprised to see this set up well for Kennard. Possibly Ansa, he should have an athleticism advantage over Trent Brown, but the interior could be a bit of a problem for the Lions if they don't, if they don't find a way to hold their gaps.
All right, moving to the defensive side of the ball, their edge rushers include Trey Flowers, Derek Rivers, and then on the other side, Adrian Claiborne, Dietrich Weiss. Now, with the defense, we're going to see something familiar to what we've been used to seeing.
Yep, and the big advantage for the Lions is that Trey Flowers, he might not play because he suffered a concussion as well in week two, like Darius Slay. But, they have a deeper defensive end talent than the Lions do. So they can replace him with Dietrich Weiss and Derek Rivers, and, they can play that answer role pretty well.
All right, in the middle, they have Lawrence Guy, Danny Shelton, Malcolm Brown, and Adam Butler.
Yeah, another interior unit that's a little bit deeper than ours. Malcolm Brown, former first rounder, be interesting to. He's been passed by Danny Shelton, but he's a guy who I think the Lions were potentially interested in trading for, but it never really came to fruition. He's still a good player. They've got some nice depth again on that interior. These guys have all been in the system. Save Danny Shelton, who was new to it, but is doing well in it.
Yeah, 8 deep on the defensive line, or that defense edge rush area.
Yep.
In the middle, in the linebacking core, they go 1 deep, Dont'a Hightower.
Yeah, and that's really all they need. He is what they want at the linebacker level and what the Lions are looking for.
And on the outside, familiar man Kyle Van Noy and Elladen Roberts.
That's a weak spot, in my opinion. You know what I mean? Like, I know Kyle Van Noy has found some success in New England, but he's still Kyle Van Noy. So I think they can exploit that if they're in their game planning.
All right, the corners are Gilmore, Rowe, and then Jonathan Jones, Jason McCourty.
Be really interesting to see how they stack up against the Lions 3. If they want to put Rowe in his big body on Kenny Golladay, that'll be a fun matchup. Gilmore on on Marvin Jones would be a nice matchup again for them. But then Tate should have an advantage over any of these other guys. And so if they want to adjust for Tate, then they're going to free somebody else up. So I don't know if they have the horses in the secondary to deal with those three on a one-on-one, but collectively they have a really good secondary.
All right, the safeties are Devin McCourty, Patrick Chung, and Duran Harmon.
And Chung is another concussion. He got a concussion last week as well, and it's possible he won't play. So their McCourty, Chung, Harmon are basically the same as the Lions, Quinn, Diggs, and Tracy Wilson, or Tavon Wilson. With Wilson basically in the Harmon is basically Wilson, whereas Chung kind of is playing in that Quandre Diggs role. So think about how the Lions defense would be affected if there was no Quandre Diggs out there. It's a significant blow for them. They have to adjust in other ways. Jonathan Jones has to step up. Harmon has to step up. So if Chung isn't able to play, it's another advantage to the Lions.
It's significant to note that Blake Bortles had 377 passing yards and four TDs against that defense we just listed off. And not only that, Jaguars rushers that don't include Leonard Fournette, because he did not play, also rushed for 110 yards.
And that's a stat line I think the Lions are capable of achieving as well. There are some matchup problems for the Patriots here, where the Lions, if they can start executing on their plays, you know, like that deep ball, the Lions have been running more efficiently. I think they're like 14th in the league in rushing right now, which is what we said. If they can be middle of the pack with Stafford playing, if he plays it the way he can, this is a good
offense.
They're
going to go 0-2.
Well, but now they're
what we hope for.
No, but then that's because Stafford hasn't been playing at the level that he's capable.
And the defense has been horrible.
Yeah, but you know what? Just from an offensive perspective, if the running backs are doing what they need to do, and if Stafford can start clicking on some of these deeper plays, they can put those numbers up. They can put up 31 on the Patriots.
Finally, the specialists, kicker Steven Guskowski, Ryan Allen's the punter, and their ace is Matthew Slater. We'll see him on all the units.
Yep.
All right, let's move on to the questions. Finally hitting the questions. Jimmy Smakovich. I see what he was going for there. This is just bad football. At what point do I just cut my losses and find something else to do on Sundays?
Well, you know, I'm never going to tell you to watch the game, but I think that we saw an improvement from the Jets to the 49ers. And we've said this is going to take a while for them to adjust. The defense probably isn't going to be playing at a level they need to be until after the bye. So if you have patience, you know, stick around. If you don't, come back in week 7.
Is this what Bob Quinn told everybody when they were hiring Matt Patricia?
No, but I mean,
I know that was a joke. I mean, but could you see what this has turned into?
Sure.
It's like, oh well, we're really rebuilding. You know, this is the next level, back and rebuilding.
Yeah, I mean, for us to think that there wasn't going to be bumps, I think it was naive. I mean,
these are more than just bumps.
We've been talking about the defense struggling, or going to struggle for a while. Yep. So,
Jimmy, if you're questioning it, you may just do it. Just get away from it for a while. You know, we've got some nice Sundays on our hands, it seems. But, you know, hey. But then we might misuse a list. Well, you could. You could give up watching, but then still listen to us. You know, because we'll fill you in on what happened.
Exactly.
You know, you'll know what's going on. Corey Rayburn asks, how much longer can a sliver of hope for this season linger? I'm impressed.
Do the bye. You know, I think when you get to the bye, you're going to know what this team can do or what they can't do. So hold on. See where they go.
12%, that stat's come up a bunch over this weekend. It always does with 0-2 teams.
Oh, yeah, it's insane.
12% of all 0-2 teams since the expansion of the playoffs in 1990 have earned their way to the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Lions aren't a lucky franchise. We're already at 12% to begin with. Sure. You know, that's going to take quite a miracle for them to make it from here. I know anything's possible, and I know you want to stay positive, but the sliver of hope, that sliver's becoming really small. It's like the little one that festers in your finger. It's hard to get out with a pair of tweezers. Okay, Suzanne, I don't know how to pronounce her last name, with a B. Suzanne B, because I've murdered so many names, I probably should have stopped. Do we have a chance against the Patriots this week? Bright lights and upset Brady, not a good mix. I hope the Lions are fired up. Well, they're not.
Well, you know, and I think the fans need to be fired up to start the game as well.
There's a lot of drinking that can go on until the kickoff comes.
You know what? Here's our approach. And Joe and I have talked about this historically, is that any team can beat any team in the NFL sure. in any given week. So is there a chance? Yes, there's a chance. Are the odds stacked against them?
Yeah, sure.
Absolutely. Are. But can they beat them?
Absolutely,
they can as well. So
stuff happens.
There is, you know what, this would be a very traditionally Lions thing to do, would be to lose to the Jets and the Niners and then beat the Patriots.
So. Yeah, and then promptly lose in Dallas next week.
But, you know, the talent, there's corrections that need to be made. Can they get into a shootout with Brady? That's a tough thing. That's a tough ask. But, you know, we've seen stranger things happen before.
All right, Mike Hodges, do you think the blunt retaliation will be a rallying point for the Lions this season?
I don't. And I don't even think the blunt retaliation was the rallying point of the 49ers game. And I know it kind of looks like that, but they went into a 3rd-and-19 on that play, and if Stafford doesn't execute that play to Tate, then we're not talking about the blunt retaliation as a rallying point. We're talking about the blunt retaliation as an idiot move, which is basically the way I kind of viewed it in my six takeaways. But I think that play to Golden Tate was more of the catalyst in turning them around. Could it be the moment that turns the season around? Well, we'll find out this week, I guess.
Mike Hodge. Oh, wait. We're just to Mike Hodge.
Yep.
Detroit versus everybody, 3-1-3. What's happened to Stafford? He was one of the best and most accurate deep ball throwers last year. He seems wildly inaccurate to start the season.
Yeah, we asked Patricia about it today, and he gave a very generic response saying it was about execution. Then we asked Jim Bob Cooter about it, and he said that last game was really an outlier in Stafford's overall career performance. So again, kind of a generic answer. But Justin Rodgers did a nice film breakdown at the Detroit News, and he pointed to him leaning too much on his back foot. And when you don't have your proper distribution in your hips and your legs, you end up loading up improperly. And when you do that, that impacts your mechanics and your throwing motion, and then that causes you to put a little bit more air on the ball than you traditionally would. So I think what Justin is essentially alluding to is that he's leaning back a little bit too much, and that's impacting his ability to get over the top of the ball to have it come down at the proper point. So could it be a mechanics issue? Sure. Could it be a confidence issue? It could. I think it's just a matter of he's got to hit a couple, and once he hits a couple, then, you know, traditionally, that's when things start to take off.
Phil Taylor has a question that's kind of attached to all that. Is Stafford hurt?
You know, I don't think he is. And I, you know, legally or per NFL legal rules, they're supposed to put him on the injury report if he is. And I don't think he is, because I think this is something we've seen crop up at times in training camp as well. But I think it's a valid question to say, is he hurt? Is there a reason that he is loading up differently than he has before?
Yeah, it's possible. I don't know. He doesn't look it. He's not. Yeah. He sometimes shows it when he's not feeling so good.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, it's a possibility. Paul Tannen, do you think all the checkdowns was because Stafford's confidence took a hit after the first game, or do you think it was by design?
I think it's by design. I think they're trying to slow the game down in order to allow the defense to rest and try and milk the clock. I think this is a strategy we saw last year with Caldwell that's carried over, where they want to play more possession ball. And so I think those checkdowns are all part of trying to hold on to the ball.
Do you think we'll see more Tracy Walker sooner rather than later, and then sucking up to the boss here? Nice work, Eric. We really appreciate it.
Man, I hope it's sooner. 10 snaps last week, but his score from PFF was 96.4, which was the highest amongst defenders in the NFL. Defenders, everyone in the NFL. Granted, it's only 10 snaps, but he's looking sharp. Good coverage. We saw that break on a ball play. I have been a guy who has been in Tracy Walker's corner for a while. I think that how they utilized him at the end of the game, the fact that they utilized him in the two-minute offense at the end of the game in a critical spot, speaks to their confidence in him. And I think he's earning more trust moving forward. Man, putting him in the slot over a tight end or putting him in the slot over a running back, he's got the length and the quickness to understand how to do that. And I would hope that he gets more than 10 snaps this week because I think he has a ascending ceiling.
All right, next up from Sweta Patel. Joe might love this question. How did Dahl and Wiggins do on Sunday, and what were their snap counts? Well, Joe Dahl had zero snap counts on offense. So he had a perfect score, according to Pro Football Focus, on his blocking. If you think about it, no, he did it, but zero for zero. And Kenny Wiggins played all 77 snaps. So we've seen a change. You know, we had Joe Dahl in week one. We saw a lot of it. Now it's Wiggins.
We saw Lang in week one.
Oh, that's right. Lang was playing. That was Dahl was in the last preseason game.
Correct.
We started.
Correct.
But didn't start on Sunday. It was Wiggins.
Yeah, there's a clear hierarchy that Wiggins is ahead of him at this point. And I thought Wiggins had a nice game. So good for him.
So following up from Ed Matthews, if Wiggins is looking good in practice, should they just let him start when Lang is healthy so we can finally have a little continuity on this line?
Lang is their best offensive lineman.
Plus, they pay him $10 million a year. They pay the guys they pay.
I get wanting continuity, but
yeah,
Lang,
bad point.
Lang is their best offensive lineman. I don't see how you could sit him.
Billy will carry on, get more touches. I like what I see from him thus far and would love to see him get the rock more.
Well, he went from getting the third amount of touches in the running backs group to the first amount of touches in the running backs group. And some of that can be attributed to the fact that LeGarrette Blount was ejected. But I would hope that his role grows, and hopefully...
Well, that should be the expectation.
Yes, and hopefully he could get more early snaps. Instead of them just looking to Blount early, I'd like to see carry on in the first two series.
All right, next up from Kyle. Is Galladay going to be considered a top 10 wide receiver by the end of the year?
Not by the end of the year, but he may start next year in that category. He is on his way. I like what I see out of him. It's a still Marvin Jones team as far as the receivers goes. And I think they're expecting him to be the main receiver. But Galladay is, what we're seeing on him is very impressive. And I think he's on his way to being a number one. But I don't think it'll be this year. I think it's not too far off in the future, though.
Now, you left this name out, probably for this question. Joseph Nicholas asks, with no extension, is this Tate's last year as a Lion? If they keep losing, is it possible they trade him before the deadline?
I have said all offseason, I think this is Tate's last year as a Lion. As far as trading him, I don't think that they will trade him. Mostly because the trade deadline in the NFL is tricky because it's so early. It's not like baseball where you're already out for the pennant chase. Exactly. And you're not trading players two-thirds of the way through the season. The trade deadline for the NFL is week six, so you've got to get these guys out early. So most teams aren't, resigned to saying, my season's over, I need to start unloading guys that are in one-year contracts, which means Tate probably isn't a piece that's going to get traded unless they're 0-6 going into the bye. Then there's a possibility, but I still think he's probably not going to get dealt.
Chris Online, the tight ends don't seem to play a big role in the offense. Is it the talent level or the game plan? I think both are true. Stafford just not looking their way. I also believe that's somewhat true. I feel like a reliable option there would really help the offense. I don't know. I like seeing Michael Roberts finally get in the end zone, though.
The big thing is that I do think it is a game plan to move away from him. I think the game plan was to shift the tight end targets over to Kenny Galladay. And so my concept was Eric Ebron wasn't going to be a consistent option on a week-to-week basis, therefore it wasn't worth the money, so they downgraded their talent. And Stafford's not going to look their way when the talent's not there. Now, Roberts, of course, did come through with that nice touchdown, which was nice to see.
Eric had to be real excited when that happened.
I was very happy, a little validity, a little validation, I guess, to my man crush on him last year. But You know, I think a lot of what you say is true, but I do think it is a, it is part of the game plan and of that they had going into last offseason that they wanted to feature their top three. And Golladay, Tate, and Marvin Jones are all getting over 80% of the snaps for a reason.
MSU Lions fan, run defense seems to be the main problem for this team. Bingo. How did A'Shaun look this week? Is bringing in Navarro Bowman an option? If so, would moving Jared Davis to the
weak side
linebacker spot help at all?
Okay, A'Shaun looked better. I liked what I saw from him. I don't know if it was a fire or just, you know, he was just ready to play more this week. I did like the improvement I saw out of him. Navarro Bowman has a chronic knee issue that is not that is preventing him from playing in the
NFL. He's not playing for a reason.
Yes, he's not coming back. And then there was a question, and then there was more than one person that asked about moving Jared Davis. Yes, to the weak side linebacker. Richard was another one, and then there was a third one that asked about the person who asked about this as well. Look, guys, in this defense, the middle linebacker and the weak side linebacker are both off the ball linebackers, and they both play behind the defensive line. The big difference is the middle linebacker has more responsibility than the weak side linebacker. He has a little bit more coverage area, but the weak side linebacker has a little bit more responsibility in coverage, but they basically are almost the same role. So no, I don't think we should move him to Will, because he's between him and Christian Jones, he's the better linebacker. And so if the roles are similar, you want to give your better linebacker the one with more responsibility. And then there's really not another middle linebacker that they're going to find out there. Navarro Bowman, even if he was healthy, it wouldn't really be an option. Jared Davis is their middle linebacker. He's going to be their middle linebacker. We just need to, you know, resign our fact to the fact that this is the way it's going to be. They're not going to move him.
All right, Brandon Kerr, considering this is a brand new defensive scheme that they are learning, in just two games, can you tell if Davis is starting to learn it?
Yeah, it's starting to, but it's going to take time. You know, last season it took him 12 weeks before he figured out how to, you know, really operate as a middle linebacker in the NFL. Now he's in a new system and he's only 2 weeks into that system and he's making mistakes, but he did improve from the Jets game to the 49ers game. It's going to take some time. He's got a lot on his plate, so I do see some improvement from him, though.
Do you think the Lions are having such a tough time on special teams because of the brand new rules? I'm seeing other problems in other teams with the same result, long returns and scores.
It's a valid question that I don't have a real good answer to, unfortunately.
They got
to
stay in their lanes.
All right. Yeah, that's really...
We're running low on time. Jack Henry, what was Agnew's snap count on defense? 17 snaps, 27% of all plays. And do you think it will increase? Can he play outside as the number two cornerback?
He played outside at San Diego, but he's more designed to be an NFL slot corner. I think he could do some spot duty on the outside when he needs to, but he's not going to be the guy that's going to take over as the number two, I don't believe, no.
All right, Brian Ballard, I am a ride-or-die Stafford guy. But if we lose this weekend, which we probably will, at what point do we switch to be an all-in on the future? We still have number nine, but drafting a decent second quarterback / heir apparent isn't a bad plan now.
Look, if you want to be the Patriots and you want to draft a Jimmy Garoppolo, it's going to cost a second-round pick to do it. That's what the Patriots did. Can you imagine what this fan base would do if they drafted a second round, if they used a second round pick on a quarterback?
Be a lot of anger when it happened. Look, and then when a few games like this occur, there's going to be a lot of blame.
You might use a second round pick on a quarterback, but it's not going to be in the next 5 years.
Yeah, probably not.
Look, in this whole concept of Brian, I love you, buddy, but you got to take a beat here. We're two games in. They're not blowing this team up. They just got their coach. They're installing a new system. All this stuff takes time. Just be a little patient. They're not the bomb's not going off in this organization. They're going to build.
This team will potentially look incredibly different next year with Lots leaving. How different will this team be next year? All new.
Yeah, like I just said, you got to be patient. Like it's going to take time. They're not going to blow this thing up. They're not going to be all new. They're gonna start adding pieces to make this team better, but this anytime we get a new coaching staff, this is just par for the course. Just take a beat, take a breath. It's gonna be okay, buddy. I promise.
Who do you have winning?
Patriots are probably gonna win. I think it's probably going to be 35-28.
I'll have Patriots 41-24. 41-24.
All right.
Isn't that crazy?
Big margin of victory for you. Yep. All right. Joe is winning 2-0 this week. And so, you know, we'll see. So
we'll
far
see.
In the
Last
season,
year I did the same and you caught up by the end.
But if any indication so far is, it might be a tough game for us. On,
yeah. Oh, yeah. Awesome. But we'll see. We're going to be watching. Eric will be in attendance way up in the press box. So wave at him.
I'm hoping we're both wrong.
Yeah. No, I hope I'm wrong every week except for when I have him winning. But, you know, that's... It's a lot of hoping and wishing. So, no reviews. New reviews from anybody this week.
Second week
slow.
In a row. That's all right.
Yeah, no, it's been the slow start of the Lions. We have a slow start with reviews.
Yeah, I've found that a lot of success with my articles, and I guess it's carrying over to the podcast, is directly related to how well the Lions are doing. So, I'm not surprised.
Yeah. So, let's hope they start doing better. That's just to help out Eric a little bit with his article views. And... thanks, everybody, for listening. We really appreciate it. You'll hear from us next week. And until then, let's go Lions.